Now I know about the weakness of the flesh, that after you've had a noon meal on a warm day, that it's going to be a real challenge for you to stay awake during the historical presentation. So I have over here my cold water police. And if he sees anybody beginning to doze, he's going to come over and give you a good one. No, actually, if I see anybody doze, I think we're going to have everybody just stand up and do some stretching, and just so we can all do okay. I hope that you have your map in hand close by. I'll be referring to it. And what I'll seek to accomplish in this afternoon session is to give you the entirety of the rest of David Brainerd's life and ministry in terms of describing it historically. Then tonight we'll look at David Brainerd and his theology, and tomorrow we'll look at David Brainerd and his methods, and also, this last session, David Brainerd and his impact upon Christian missions. So this session is to finish out the historical survey of his life and what he did month by month and year by year. The way that we describe this particular session is this: how can a man travel so far and give himself to preaching the gospel so much while suffering so continually with loneliness, illness, depression, poverty, and hardship? And that really is a summary of what we're looking at in this session as we describe those days in which he lived and what he actually did. Where we left off was that he was now ready, after spending 6 months training in the end of Long Island, and he was ready to make his way over to what was the assignment to the Forks of the Delaware. And that had been the place that the Scottish Mission Society had determined that he was going to be, based upon the recommendation of John Sargent, who lived up here in Stockbridge. John Sargent had come down, surveyed the Forks of the Delaware, had come over to the Susquehanna River, and he had determined that there was a great need for a missionary there. Well, David Brainerd was ready to come over to the Forks of the Delaware and labor there at the end of that winter. But because there had been a conflict that had arisen here at the Forks of the Delaware between the Indians and the white people, he did not travel there, but rather in April of 1743, he traveled here up to Stockbridge. And he joined John Sargent there for a time. And that took 8 days of hard riding for him. He's riding a horse. 8 days of hard riding for him to get up to Stockbridge. And that is the place, by the way, where Jonathan Edwards would end up being a missionary for 6 months. Remember, Jonathan Edwards was actually put out of his church after 26 years of ministry. And that whole story is very interesting. But his church put him out in Northampton. He made his way over to Stockbridge as a missionary. So that's the same place. But before that, long before that ever happened, David Brainerd arrived in Stockbridge, and John Sargent assured the Scottish Mission Society that here in Conemaugh, New York, there was an Indian tribe of Mohican Indians who needed to hear the gospel of Christ, and they were without the gospel. And so that is the first place that David Brainerd took up his missionary labors, was in the area of Conemaugh, New York. It was 30 kilometers to the northwest of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and he would labor there for 1 year. He used an interpreter that John Sargent had trained. This interpreter's name was John Wawapekuanot. Wawapekuanot. That's a pretty hard name to say. Has 18 letters in it. And I kind of like Poe. It has three letters. Or I like Bob. It has three letters. And if we were working together, it would be nice to say, Poe, let's go and preach the gospel somewhere. But poor David Brainerd, and you know Americans are not good with names, he had to say to John Wawapekuanot, let's go preach the gospel. And so during the same time, David Brainerd was trying to learn Indian language from John Sargent. But he did take the interpreter, and after just a few encounters up there in Conemaugh, he was very discouraged. He realized, and he said, quote, I feared that nothing would ever be done for them to any happy effect. Reality set in. It's one thing to say, I want to be a missionary and carry the gospel. But it's another thing to actually meet with the challenges and obstacles of what it is to be a missionary. During that time, he began to live close to Conemaugh, actually about a mile and a half away from a tribe in Conemaugh. He lived with a Scottish couple in the wilderness. This was about 18 miles from Albany, New York. And this Scottish couple, their name was McGinley. And they could hardly speak English, even though they were Scottish. They spoke a very Highland Scot type of English, and David Brainerd could not even understand the wife, could barely understand the man, and lived with them in their wilderness cabin. They did not have a floor. It was a dirt floor. He put down boards, and on the boards put down a pile of straw, and that was his bed. His diet consisted mostly of hasty pudding, which was a cornmeal mush, boiled corn, and bread that had been baked in the ashes. And sometimes he got a little meat and butter. He traveled 3 kilometers on foot every day to be able to preach to the Indians. He struggled daily with depression and loneliness and physical discomfort. And with all of this, he said, quote, my spiritual conflicts and distresses far exceed all of these. The Lord grant that I may learn to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Brainerd's first year at Conemaugh was very eventful. Before setting up the first school that he had for Indians, he made a number of trips to New York to consult with the commissioners of the Scottish Society. And these trips brought considerable hardships. There were times that he was lost in the woods, times that he spent nights sleeping out in the woods under the stars. And there were always, along with these outward adversities, the inward conflicts and distresses. Finally, in July of 1743, he moved into a hut that he built for himself. And then he took his interpreter, John Wawapekuanot, and made him the headmaster of the school that he started. And he found some encouragement in this work, that if he could teach these Indians some English, he would be able to communicate Christian truths to them in ways that he was not able to with their own language. But still, Brainerd never thought the Indians there at Conemaugh really understood or accepted his message. As the word spread of this new teaching, the congregation of Indians soon grew to over 40. And he was somewhat encouraged by the response, as many, quote, began to renounce their idolatry and refused to take part in the feast during which sacrifices were offered to mysterious deities. Many became concerned about the state of their souls. Still, though, although some rejected their way, these old ways that I mentioned, they did not put their hope in God as their Savior, according to the gospel. And during this whole time, Brainerd is struggling with sickness. And again, with those symptoms of tuberculosis. In the face of such overwhelming hardships, Brainerd possessed a meek, a patient, and an elevated spirit. Amid his difficulties, he said, quote, "It is good for me to be afflicted, that I may die wholly to this world." Again, he wrote, quote, "I felt contented with my circumstances and sweetly resigned to God. In prayer, I enjoyed much freedom and blessed God as much for my present circumstances as if I had been a king, and thought that I had found a disposition to be contented in any circumstances. Blessed be God." During that time, many Indians had left the area. The white man were stealing their lands and frightening them into a westward retreat. And that seemed best to Brainerd to be able to persuade the few remaining Indians to move down to Stockbridge, where they could be under the teaching of John Sargent, and then David could move to another area. And so that was one of the things that he did in his labors, was try to get Indians that were scattered through the woods to try to get them to move to one area where they could be a community of faith and under the teaching of the gospel of Christ. Now, after a year at Conemaugh, David Brainerd's accomplishments were not impressive, but he did have a sample of the lot of a missionary's life to the Redskins. He had learned how to learn a language, build a hut, discipline himself to ride a horse in severe weather, sleep on straw, and sustain himself on a stark diet. In March of 1744, Brainerd was given a chance to leave the wilderness and become a pastor of that church in East Hampton, Long Island, that we've referred to later. In fact, all the townspeople unanimously voted that they wanted to invite Brainerd to become the pastor of the church there. And this was one of the largest and wealthiest congregations on an island that was famous for its beauty and its prosperity. And by this time, however, his devotion to be a minister to the Indians far outweighed his desire to have a comfortable position. And he chose to continue as a missionary to the Indians. And then 3 days later, he received news of a second congregation that was anxious to secure him as their minister. And I was just speaking to Jayakanth about this very thing, how easy it would be, rather than laboring among very hard situations among the poor, to take a congregation in areas of the cities, and especially in areas like the UK or America, where it would be much more comfortable to live to our human flesh. But David Brainerd, though he had that opportunity right before him and could have easily done that, and anybody would have been very glad for him, he said, "No, I'm going to give myself as a missionary to the Indians." And so, May 1st of 1744, he received the orders from the Scottish Mission to move to his original commission there in Pennsylvania at the forks of the Delaware. And so he moved the Indians from Conemaugh to Stockbridge, and he moved to the forks. He was going to be at the forks for 1 year, just as he had been at Conemaugh for 1 year. So he rode the 230 kilometers from Stockbridge down to the forks of the Delaware. And as I go through this, and I mentioned to you all the different times that he's riding his horse, you might try to keep in mind how much he's traveling over these mountains, all the different distances, the great amount of distances that he's putting in, traveling as a missionary upon a horse and sleeping out with very little to live upon. Upon his arrival in Delaware and the border of New Jersey and Pennsylvania, He became very discouraged with the state of the Indians. They'd been scattered into the wilderness by land-hungry white people, and they were very leery of listening to anybody that had white skin. Nevertheless, he began to preach. He preached to both the Indians and to a nearby settlement of the Irish. He rode around all day collecting audiences, anybody that would listen to him. He preached to them the grace of God. And during that time, he still was struggling with his illnesses. He wrote, quote, "Rode several hours in the rain through the howling wilderness, although I was so disordered in body that little or nothing but blood came from me." Before delving too deep into the work there, after about 2 months, he rode back to Newark, New Jersey, 2 days of hard riding in the hot, sultry June weather, where he would be ordained as a Presbyterian minister by the Newark Presbytery. So finally he returned back to the Forks of the Delaware, to the Indians there, though extremely feeble and scarcely able to walk. Brainerd experienced very little fruit and was very discouraged by the heathenism and the irreligion of those that he was now dwelling among. He did not think that his efforts in the Forks of the Delaware were any success. Yet he was very happy to be where God had placed him to be. He rejoiced that God was his portion, and sometimes he was enabled to rely confidently on God to do a mighty work among the pagan tribes. He described this in his diary of June 27, 1744. It said, quote, "My soul seemed to rely wholly upon God for success in the diligent and faithful use of means. Saw with greatest certainty that the arm of the Lord must be revealed for the help of these poor heathen if ever they were delivered from the bondage of the powers of darkness." His desire to see Indians converted just grew deeper and deeper than they had ever been. On July 23rd of that year, that same summer, he said, quote, "Had a sweet resignation for the divine will, and desired nothing so much as the conversion of the heathen to God, and that his kingdom might come in his own heart and in the hearts of others." Brainerd's Calvinistic belief in the sovereignty of God, in the salvation of sinners, was strengthened, and his dependence on God just continued to grow. He said how much he longed to see the kingdom of Christ come in power among the heathens. In fact, his entry for July 6, 1744 says, quote, "Last year I longed to be prepared for the world of glory." He wanted to go home to heaven and speedily depart out of this world. "But of late, all of my concern almost is for the conversion of the heathen, and for that end I long to live." On July 21st he wrote, quote, "I exceedingly longed that God would get to himself a name among the heathen. I had no notion of joy from this world. I cared not where or how I lived, or what hardships I went through, so that I could but gain souls to Christ." But the problems were endless. The Indians were scattered. They were devoted to their idolatrous feast. Their religious leaders were called powwows, and they threatened to curse and poison the people if they accepted Christ. And he struggled to communicate with them, to be able to use terminology where they could understand spiritual concepts. But Brainerd continued to be confident in the power of the gospel and found great comfort in relying upon God for the salvation of the Indians. He said, quote, "It seemed to me that there could be no impediment sufficient to have struck that glorious work, seeing the living God, as I strongly hoped, was engaged for it." He labored under this sense of obligation for the fullest means which God normally employs in saving sinners, and particularly that of prayer. He prayed often. He prayed much. God alone could accomplish this work, so he travailed long hours in intercessory supplication. He was habitually in the forest, pouring out his soul to God, that he would bare his arm and save many. I'll tell you more in detail about William Carey, who went to India. And William Carey, having read the life and diary of David Brainerd, included into his form of agreement among his missionary cohorts there in India, they recalled and read about David Brainerd. And three times a year, they read their covenant as missionaries. They would mention how that they must remember David Brainerd in the woods of America, pouring out his soul to God in prayer, and how that they, as missionaries, needed to immolate this very man in his trust in God as he prayed. In October of 1744, he would take his first trip to the Susquehanna, the forks of the Delaware, where he was laboring. From this point over to the forks of the Delaware was 180 kilometers. He would take four trips, either from the forks of the Delaware over here or from Cross Weekson over here, four trips over the very rugged mountains. This past summer, I was at our family conference, which is held, by the way, right here by the forks of the Delaware. In fact, the house where David Brainerd lived while he was at the forks of the Delaware is still there. And there's a sign saying, this is David Brainerd's house. And we have a family conference that meets right there on the river. And it's very tall and rugged mountains. And one of the men in our congregation, who's just retired as a lieutenant colonel with the United States Army, he made it his purpose to walk the entire trail it's called the Appalachian Trail. It goes from the state of Georgia in the south all the way to the state of Maine in the north. And he had already walked about two-thirds of it. And he said, this region right here that we're talking about, from the river of the Susquehanna River up here to the forks of the Delaware, was the most rugged of the mountains on that side of the United States. That's where David Brainerd was living, ministering, and doing all these very long rides on horseback. So here he, in October of 1744, he would take his first of the four trips over there to the Susquehanna River. And although that the Indians had some interest in the gospel he was preaching, Brainerd still found little tangible success in his work. And also, especially during his second trip, he became very ill. He was just wanting to find more people that he could preach the gospel to. He continued to labor under sieges of depression while carrying on the work. He often called his depression a kind of death. And if you read his diary, you'll find at least 22 places in the diary where he says he longed for death as a freedom from his misery. For example, Sunday, December 16th, 1744, quote, was so overwhelmed with dejection that I knew not how to live. I longed for death exceedingly. My soul was sunk in deep waters, and the floods were ready to drown me. And I was so much oppressed that my soul was in a kind of horror. And it caused him compounded misery that his mental distress hindered his ministry and his devotion. There were times he was simply immobilized by these distresses, and he couldn't function anymore. He enters in Tuesday, September 2nd, 1746, into his diary, quote, was scarce ever more confounded with a sense of my own unfruitfulness and unfitness of my work than now. Oh, what a dead, heartless, barren, unprofitable wretch did I now see myself to be. My spirits were so low and my body bodily strength so wasted that I could do nothing at all. At length, being much overdone, lay down on a buffalo skin, but sweated much of the whole night, just in misery. He took his second trip to the Susquehanna in May of 1745, and Jonathan Edwards gives this account of his trip. And this is summarized from Jonathan Edwards. Edwards said that Brainerd spoke of these long rides as taking days traveling through the hideous and howling mountain wilderness. Edwards spoke of Brainerd being exposed to murderous storms with no shelter and not being able to make a fire in the rain. He spoke of David's horse having eaten poisonous plants, so he had to walk him many miles over this dark, rugged terrain. When he reached the Susquehanna River, how he traveled over 100 miles up and down the river trying to speak with 7 or 8 distinct different tribes, and they all had their own languages. The different tribes could not understand each other, and David would have to secure an interpreter for each tribe, with most of the people being in opposition to Christianity. Some had a willing disposition to hear. He lodged on the ground, open in the open air, and often he had little to eat. He felt extremely ill with a type of malaria at one point, and it was attended by a burning fever, extreme pains in his head and in his bowels, and a large evacuation of blood. Edwards concludes that trip to the description of the trip to the Susquehanna with these words. He arrived at the forks of the Delaware on Thursday, May 30th, after having rode in his journey about 340 miles, which is about 510 kilometers. Yet after a year of labor at the forks of the Delaware, Brainerd seemed to have done no more good than he had done at Conemaugh. Some of the Indians had abandoned some of their worst excesses that were linked to their heathen customs, but by June of 1745, 2 full years after he had begun his mission work, he had failed to make one convert. He was feeling himself to be a burden to the missionary society and was seriously considering giving up his position. In June of 1745, he left the forks of the Delaware and he went down here to Crosswieckson in New Jersey. And it would be here that he would find the great success that he had been searching for. This is the place where God moved in amazing power and brought awakening and blessing to the Indians. It was about 85 miles or 130 kilometers to the south of the forks of the Delaware, close to present-day Trenton, New Jersey. And as in Pennsylvania, he found that the Indians were scattered throughout the land. And unlike before, though, they offered no objections to his preaching. They began to quickly gather others to hear the message. And as the Indians became increasingly interested, he began to meet with them individually to discuss the things that he had been teaching. He found these Indians to be serious and attentive and not inclined to argue or ridicule as others had done. Some of the Indians even traveled 15 miles a day to tell other people of the white man who spoke of Jesus the Savior. So the interest in his preaching really grew quickly. 3 days after he arrived, the hearers increased to nearly 30 people after 3 days. They were solemn and under deep concern for their souls. They even wept, and they wished that Christ would save them, and they requested that Brainerd would preach twice every day, and he cheerfully complied with that request. So during this time, David became increasingly reliant upon God's working on the Indians before there would be any success. He was so encouraged with the work of God that began there that in July, just about 6 weeks after he had gone down to Crosswieckson, He made a return visit back up here to the forks of the Delaware. He rode his horse, that's 130 kilometers, just to go back and see if God might work among those Indians again as he began to preach. And there became a major breakthrough there at the forks of the Delaware. For his interpreter, Moses Tatami, and his wife were saved. They came to an experiential knowledge of Christianity, and they were baptized. And this helped tremendously for the interpreter, Tatami, to understand Christian doctrine and be able to communicate it more clearly. In addition, the Indians were more likely to take the message seriously because of their respect for Tatami, because he was a landowner and a leader in the area. So what a breakthrough that was for our brother David Brainerd. But just several weeks after being there, he made his way back down to Cross Weeksen in August, and the Indians were eagerly waiting for him to come back. And when he had left, he had just begun to see a glimpse of that cloud like a man's hand on the horizon that was coming. You remember that scriptural description. And upon his return later, the heavens were showering blessings and the winds of revival were beginning to blow in ever-increasing strength. So as Brainerd preached the love of Jesus Christ and admonished sinners to come to him, his voice was almost drowned by the sobs and the groans of souls that were in travail. Whereas before, his most earnest pleadings and constant warnings were apparently without result, now the simplest word of the grace of God in Jesus Christ fell upon the hearts of the Indians with crushing power. There were mourners in every house, and they were pouring out their souls to God, old people and young people alike. One young woman who had never heard before that she even had a soul came to a meeting out of curiosity, and while he was preaching, she began to cry out in distress as though her heart would break. And after the service, she lay upon the ground crying out, "Have mercy on me and help me to give you my heart." And Brainerd said this was truly a surprising day of God's power and seemed enough to convince the atheists of the truth, the importance, and the power of God's word. And before the month was over, 25 persons had professed faith in Jesus Christ and had given a solid evidence of a change of heart. And so, on August 25th, with a large crowd of Indians and whites looking on, Brainerd baptized those converts. And he reminded them of their obligation to continue following Christ with their whole lives. What an amazing thing. That month, only 6 weeks after his first visit to Cross Weeksen, Brainerd had witnessed a spiritual awakening among the Indians. He was so encouraged that many came to a saving knowledge of the Son of God, and many more traveled great distances to hear him preach. And he attributed this response fully to God's sovereign work in their lives. He said, quote, "God's manner of working upon them appeared so entirely supernatural and above means that I could scarce believe he used me as an instrument, or what I spake as a means of carrying out his work. God appeared to work entirely alone, and I saw no room to attribute any of this work to any created arm." And in the ensuing months, Brainerd's ministry continued to be blessed with uninterrupted success. Day after day, his messages were empowered by the Holy Spirit with mighty results. Then he would take his third trip to the Susquehanna River on August 27, 1745, because again his hopes of revival were so raised because of what happened in Cross Weeksen. He went by Philadelphia. You see Cross Weeksen to Philadelphia. He went there to Philadelphia, where he obtained a recommendation from the governor of the state of Pennsylvania that he could show to the chiefs of the tribe to give him more of an open door among them, that he did have some credibility. And this time, this third trip, he would go from Cross Weeks into Philadelphia and north directly to the forks of the Delaware. That was on September 1st. And when he got to the forks, he received more of a reception than ever before. And during the first preaching on this journey, quote, "the word appeared to be attended with some power and caused some tears among the assembly. The number of the Indians there inquired more into the gospel with concern for their souls." On September 9th, he began that 180-kilometer trip westward to the Susquehanna River. 3 days later of hard riding, he arrived there to his destination. He was greatly disturbed again to see their heathenish dance and their revel. With sorrow, he viewed their drunkenness and their howling and chanting and wild singing and dancing. Their dark savagery was encouraged by the nearby whites who were selling them alcohol. And also, there were three different tribes in the place he was in, speaking different languages, quote, "wholly unintelligible to each other." And after 2 weeks, he left there weak in body, dejected in mind, and started home, where he could find the joys of Christian fellowship again there in Cross Weeksen. In December of 1745, there in Cross Weeksen, he began to catechize the Indians, the believers. He began to disciple this new community of believers, having baptized those who showed evidence of salvation. Throughout the fall, he began to meet with Indians individually to give them more teaching. In December of 1745, he began to give catechetical lectures, which we'll tell you more about tomorrow, to those who were ready for even deeper discipleship. In January of 1746, he got a schoolmaster to arrive there, and they started a school. They began to teach the children by day and the adults by night, where they could teach them English and be able to teach them more of the Word of God. In April, he began to administer the Lord's Supper, and he taught them to pray and fast in preparation for the Lord's Supper. In May of 1746, he took a huge step in his ministry by moving the believing Indians from Cross Weeksen north to Cranberry, trying to get them all together in one place where he felt like there could be a permanent community and they could be taught more easily. So less than a year after he had gone to Cross Weeksen, he had a congregation of over 140 Christian Indians, and who looked to him for guidance for both secular and sacred matters. This was the success that he had been longing for in other areas. He says of this congregation, quote, "I know of no assembly of Christians where there seems to be so much of the presence of God, where brotherly love so much prevails, and where I should so much delight in the public worship of God. Although not more than 9 months ago they were worshiping devils and dumb idols under the power of pagan darkness and superstition. Amazing change this, effected by nothing less than divine power and grace." Brothers, let's stand. Let's just stand. Want to just have you stretch just a bit? I know you're probably... Now, don't do any of your kung fu or tai chi, or you might get the guy next to you. But just kind of stretch it out. And all right, you may be seated. Think of David Brainerd. That's what I do when I begin to think I've got it so bad. I think of David Brainerd. We're going to go now on his fourth trip to the Susquehanna, August 11, 1746. This would be his last trip. By now, he was pale, thin, and weak. These many long rides across this mountainous wilderness had almost wasted him. How pleasant it would have been to have the quiet confines of a home, of a wife, with friends all about him to bring him comfort and cheer. He had entertained the prospect of marriage, and that to Jerusha, the second daughter of Jonathan Edwards. They were very much in love. Should he stay, or should he continue his long, lonely rides to the west to take the gospel to precious souls in the region beyond? He made his decision, quote, "But now these thoughts of taking up permanent residence seem to be wholly dashed to pieces, not by necessity, but of choice. It appeared to me just right that I should be destitute of house and home and of many of the comforts of life which I rejoice to see others of God's people enjoy. At the same time, I saw so much of the excellency of Christ's kingdom and the infinite desirableness of its advancement in the world that it swallowed up all my other thoughts and made me willing, yea, even rejoice, to be made a pilgrim or hermit in the wilderness to my dying moment, if I might promote the blessed interest of my great Redeemer." He was truly a living sacrifice consumed on the altar of love for the salvation of the Indians in the American wilderness. So he departed for the Susquehanna on August 11, 1746, and he began his ride back from there on September 11, so he was gone for over a month. And instead of riding, as we had mentioned, from Cranberry or across Weeks and up north to the forks of the Delaware, this time he took a southerly route through Philadelphia, and he went south over to the river and then north, avoiding these greater mountains on the north route. But still, it would be 300 kilometers one way to get to where he was going on the river. He struggled daily with disease and infirmity. Each night he would awake with cold sweats, coughing blood. He lodged in houses filled with smoke. At night he couldn't sleep. In the mornings there were constant headaches. There were rides during his time visiting tribes along the river that were 75 kilometers or 45 kilometers in length. He slept in the open air and often had no food to eat. One night he lay down in the woods without a fire to keep him warm. He had no food to cook or a fire to ward off the wild beast. And he said on that occasion, quote, "Never was I more weak and worn out in all my life." After 10 o'clock, some Indians came by wanting to hear him preach, but realizing they first had to give him something to eat and minister to his needs. His discourses to the heathens were to persuade them to turn to God. He said, quote, "I scarce ever saw more clearly than this day that God's work was to convert souls, especially poor heathens. I knew I could not touch them. I saw I could only speak to dry bones, but could give them no sense of what I said. My eyes were up to God for help. I could say the work was his, and if done, the glory would be his." Brainerd was assured that his labors would not be in vain. He said, quote, "Whether the issue of it," meaning the trip to the Susquehanna, "would be the setting up of Christ's kingdom there, or the drawing of a few persons down to my congregation in New Jersey, or whether they were now only, these trips only being prepared for some further attempts that might be made among them," he said, "I did not determine. But I was persuaded that the journey would not be lost. Blessed be God that I had any encouragement and hope." Finally, after 1 month of these kind of labors, the sick man began his long ride back to Cranberry, coughing up blood, sweating in weakness, hardly able to eat anything. And on the way home, there were times that he was so sick that he could not preach to those who desired to hear him, or even able to ride his horse. He got back there to the Indians, and he stayed until he was too sick to minister to them. His illness began to overcome him. His diary was full of complaints of how weak he was and how hard it was to continue in the ministry in his physical condition. He was so weak now that there were times that he could not carry on the normal duties of caring for his flock in Cranberry. Yet despite his failing condition, he drove himself until he could not anymore. Long rides, bad weather, poor food, lack of rest, all these had brought him to an utterly weakened condition. So finally, in November of that year, he went up north close to Newark, New Jersey, for about 4 months to the house of Jonathan Dickinson, and that rest helped him some, but it did not overcome his weakness. Interesting to note, and I'll share more with you about this on the fifth message, it was while he was living those 4 months in the house of Jonathan Dickinson that Jonathan Dickinson started Princeton College, or Princeton University. It started in his home. David Brainerd was the first student of Princeton, known then as a log college, became Princeton College, Princeton University. And a lot of it was due to Brainerd as to the reason it was started. Helping you to see the impact along the way of this man upon the Christian faith and the spread of the gospel for years, generations to come. In March, he returned to visit his people in Cranberry. His emaciated appearance stirred them deeply. They were shocked to see his weakened condition. By this time, he was very depressed with his sickness. He was even looking forward to death. And this was their last meeting. He gathered them for singing and prayer, and they were able to show their pastor their affection for a last time. He left again for northern New Jersey, and after being there just 2 days, he had never returned to the scenes of his missionary labors. During that time, he performed a marriage ceremony, helped with an ordination, helped examine his brother John, who would come down to Cranberry and take over his labors as the pastor of the church in Cranberry. And then on April 20th, he left New Jersey for Boston, where he would spend a month. While he was in Boston during that month, the doctor surmised that ulcers had broken out in his lungs. And for several weeks, he was unable to even speak or whisper, but he stayed very busy, though he's practically an invalid. He entertained many visitors. He did, and these visitors were of considerable note and character, some of them wealthy and desiring to contribute money to get Bibles down to the congregation in Cranberry. He collected and revised several papers of the New England Puritan, Thomas Shepherd, just staying busy, serving the Lord as long as he had breath to breathe. And while there on June 18th, when he was brought right to the gates of death, eternity seemed very near. And coming out of that, he wrote to his unconverted brother Israel. Here's what he said to his unconverted brother Israel as he was so near to death. Quote, "Let me tell you, my brother, eternity is another thing than we take it to be when we're in a healthful state. Oh, how vast and boundless. Oh, how fixed and unalterable. Oh, of what infinite importance it is that we are prepared for eternity. I've been dying. I've had clear views of eternity and have seen the blessedness of the godly in some measure, and have longed to share their happy estate as well as have been comfortably satisfied, that through grace I shall do so. But oh, what anguish is raised in my mind to think of an eternity for those who are Christless, for those who are mistaken and bring their false hopes to the grave with them. The sight was so dreadful I could by no means bear it. I said, under a more affecting sense than ever before, who can dwell with everlasting burnings? Oh, I thought, could I now see my friends, that I might warn them to see to it that they lay their foundation for eternity and lay it sure. Oh, my brother, let me then beseech you to examine whether indeed you are a new creature, whether you have acted above self, and whether the glory of God has ever been the sweetest and highest concern to you, whether you've ever been reconciled to all the perfections of God. In a word, whether God has been your portion, and holy conformity to Him has been your chief delight. If you cannot answer positively, consider seriously the frequent breathings of your soul. Do not put yourself off with a slight answer. If you've had reason to think you are graceless, oh, give yourself and the throne of grace no rest till God rise and save. Here's a man that could preach the gospel. Here's a man that had poured out his soul for these 4.5 years. And you can see by his labor and his sacrifice that he was a man that knew something of eternity, and that only by the grace of God can sinners be reconciled to God through Christ. It was his passion. It was his heart. And right there on his deathbed, so near to eternity, he would plead with his brother Israel, repent, repent, turn, what, before it's too late. He wrote another letter to a ministerial student during that same time, and he said, quote, "How rare are the instances of those who live and act from day to day as on the verge of eternity, striving to fill up their remaining moments in the service and to the honor of our great Master. We insensibly trifle away time while we have it enough of it. But, oh dear sir, a dying bed, if we enjoy reason clearly, will give another view of things. Oh, dear sir, do not think it enough to live at the rate of common Christians. Alas, to how little purpose do they often converse when they meet together. The visits are frequently extremely barren, and the conscience cannot but condemn us for this misimprovement of time. But the way to enjoy the divine presence and to be fitted for distinguishing service for God is to live a life of great devotion and constant self-dedication to Him. And, oh dear sir, let me beseech you frequently to attend to the great and precious duties of secret fasting and prayer." After being a month there in Boston, at the end of May 1747, he rode to the house of Jonathan Edwards in Northampton, Massachusetts, a ride of 140 kilometers, where he would spend his last 4 months of his life. He would die in Jonathan Edwards' house, October 9th, 1747, at the age of 29 years. 5 lessons I'd like to give, make that 4. 4 lessons. Number 1. We asked the question when we started, how could a man travel so far? Give himself to preaching the gospel so much, while suffering so continually with loneliness, illness, depression, poverty, and hardship. What a high standard for a work ethic, for personal sacrifice and suffering. His relentless drive disallowed any problems to distract him or defeat him. Problems will come to missionaries. And brethren, faith must win the victory. It must be something that we are sold out to. It must be something that consumes our hearts and our minds, that we will not allow any problem or anybody to in any way distract us from the task that the King of Heaven, Jesus Christ, has given us to do. We must be faithful. We must be given to that higher purpose and that eternal joy of serving our Redeemer no matter what happens to us. That's how this man could do these things. He loved God. He was amazed that his Redeemer would die for him. He never lost a sense of the amazingness of grace. And thus he would serve in such an amazing way. Secondly, missionaries must learn that much of their work as they live on the field, they will learn much of their work as they live on the field experiencing the culture and life that they must live. In other words, everything cannot be learned before one goes to the mission field. Language and basic life survival needs sometimes can only be addressed after a man goes to the field. And adapting to another culture takes years to learn and to adjust to. But how crucial much of it is. It's not going to be easy for a man to become a missionary and live among a people of another culture, another language. To live and eating food and wearing clothes and carrying on survival in their culture, it's not going to be an easy thing. But God does call some men to do it. I think of a missionary couple that came from the United States and were dropped into Tanzania among a people called the Datoga tribe. And there, they were put into a mud hut with a thatch roof, and it's an immersion-type training. And they began to work with this family, sharing their meals with them and eating the meals that the family cooked, began to live life with them and learn the language from them, just like David Brainerd did. And this just happened a few years ago. This immersion training can only be done by people that are so committed to give their lives to bringing the gospel to a people, especially a people who've never heard the gospel before. And after 2.5 years, this American family, in doing that, being immersed with this tribal family, in this culture, with this language, and being a part of their lives, learned the language, able then to build their own house, had won credibility, had built relationships, and then were carrying on the work of the gospel, and still are today, and how we can thank God for such an one of many examples that follows after what David Brainerd has done. Number three lesson, the work of a missionary is evangelizing, discipling, catechizing, church planting, shepherding, training leaders, establishing education where necessary, and combating relevant social issues where necessary. But you can really summarize the work of a missionary as evangelism and church planting. And all of these fit within that basic description. That's the work of a missionary. Not to change a culture, not to give himself only to dealing with social evils and social action, but the first and the main thing is to preach Christ and to plant churches, to train leaders to pastor those churches, leaders in their own country, where those churches will be real indigenous churches to that culture. That was one of the 11 principles that William Carey had as far as what their philosophy of missions. But they must train Indians to win India for Christ. For only Indians will win India for Christ. Evangelism and church planting. And fourthly, God's blessings come in some places at some times and not in other places at other times. And that is entirely due to the sovereignty of God. God determines when and where he will begin to save people and cause deep spiritual impressions while we preach the gospel. David Drainard could have very little success, relative success in economy or in the early year at his work in the Forks of the Delaware or along the Susquehanna. But he goes down to Cross Weeksen and God's power, God's Spirit comes in power. Why there and not over in the river? Why there and not up in Conemaugh? Why? It's entirely due to the sovereignty of God's grace. When he comes, is according to his own sovereign wisdom and pleasure. Well, brethren, may this overview of the life, ministry that we've taken so far of David Brainerd be, as it's been to me, I hope it is to you, something that's humbling, something that's challenging, something that's stirring, something that will, for years to come, help you to think through the great need to have a serious personal piety before God, to not depend upon your own strength or wisdom or methods, but to be a man of God, saturated with his word, much on your knees in prayer, and make preaching the gospel, as we heard this morning, make preaching the gospel and the work that's clearly described in the scripture the main things of our lives. May God bless us and help us to that end.